Wilk for Publishing Talks. Today I'm interviewing Richard Nash. How are you, Richard?
Good, thanks.
Good. Well, we've used a variety of technologies to make this call. Hopefully the sound quality will be good enough. So, Richard, I know you've been in the book business and you've done a lot of other things, but maybe you could talk a little bit briefly about your experience and how you got into the book business in the first place, which is a kind of interesting story, I think.
Well, I was a theater director, and one of my collaborators is a playwright named Sander Hicks, who was running a tiny publishing business on the side called Soft Skull Press. And over the course of us working together in the late 90s, 2000, he happened to come upon a pretty big project, the biography of George Bush that had been killed by its publisher, St. Martin's, and Sander came in and rescued it. And as with many sort of dramatic things that happen to tiny businesses, it was both an immense opportunity and a disaster. And as a result of the sort of disastrous parts of it, Sander, you know, temporarily and ultimately permanently left the company. And I was kind of just there as the only person over the age of 22. And so I sort of just helped out and actually ended up falling in love with publishing, even in the most, it was a pretty, stressed out business at the time, more debt than annual revenue, and not to mind more debt than profit. So I learned to fall in love with publishing under the most difficult circumstances. And in a certain sense, at a time when we now realize, although I don't know how much of this we realized at the time, publishing was about to go through changes so rapid that, you know, we've all been barely able to keep up.
Well, that's certainly, I think, the you've entered publishing at one of the most either fraught or opportune times possible.
Exactly. And I do try to think of it now as, God, what better time to be in publishing?
Well, yeah, because the disruption kind of opened doors that weren't open before. It obviously makes it challenges for lots of entities and structures that currently exist. And so after Soft Skull, which, as you know, as I recollect, was sold then, and you went to work briefly, I think, for Charlie Winton and Jack Shoemaker.
Yeah, that's right. After our distributor, Publishers Group West, went bankrupt in very late 2006, the impact in our cash flow working capital situation was such that I had to sell. So I sold to Charlie Winton, originally the founder of Publishers Group West, in the spring of 2007, and worked with him and Jack Shoemaker, an iconic editor, over the rest of, you know, a year and a half. I left officially in early 2009. Again, it was another one of these situations where, there were challenges in the narrow situation itself, but there was also this sort of, I decided to resign 2 days after attending Tools of Change, the O'Reilly conference, in February of 2009, February of this year. It was this feeling that the world might pass me by if I don't jump off that particular conveyor belt, which was kind of going in circles, and try to build my own damn conveyor belt.
Right, which is kind of the interesting point. I mean, you've obviously done a lot of really interesting things in publishing, and I've admired your work for a long time, but what I wanted to talk about today is the present and the future. The past is context, but I think what's gotten interesting is how you've begun to think about publishing. Kind of breaking it down to the base components, and maybe you could talk a little bit about what it is that's motivating you right now, and the concept, and actually then the structure that you are trying to put together.
Yeah, well, it became clear to me, always problems are clearer than solutions, but it became clear to me that we were, in traditional publishing, we were extracting the last tiny little bits of operational profitability less. We were basically on that, classic curve in the XY-axis, we were asymptotic. We had no future in front of us. So we had to sort of go backwards and figure out, well, what is it really that we're doing? And Soft Skull, as an independent press that was always kind of living hand to mouth, did offer a kind of opportunity to be exposed to the raw reality of what it was that publishing was. And in a sense, publishing is nothing more than a solution to the problem, how do you connect writers and readers? That's the sort of the deep need. That's the sort of the market. That's the core of what the market is. It's a two-sided market. On the one side, writers. On the other side, readers. And how are we going to connect the two as effectively as possible? And what I realized in part from Soft Skull is that the writer and reader is sometimes the same person. It's often the same person. That Soft Skull was one of the few publishers of any size at all that still accepted unsolicited submissions, which meant that we got a lot of mail every day. We got a lot of email every day. We got a lot of regular mail every day. And I would say a good half of the submissions that we were getting were from people who weren't just mailing out willy-nilly to 300 publishers. They were people that were reading our books. Many of them people who were reading 2, 3, 4 of our books a year. So our most important customers were people who were sending us their manuscripts in the hopes that we would publish them. And we were responding by sending them form rejection letters. Now, what kind of a way is that to treat your best customer? Is to send them a little Xerox slip. So what I realized the internet offered was a way to more systematically engage with the people who were both our most important customers and the people who wanted to write books that we would publish. And so what I am looking to try to do now is recognize that Soft Skull is not a kind of this force that decides what should be published, but rather a process that helps a community decide what they want to read.
So in a sense, you're, clearly, and I think I recognize this, you're trying to rethink the model that is based on an authority model. That's what, or at least what I call it, an authority model, which is publisher as voice of quality and a kind of product-centric view that then says from that base of accepted quality, we will then transmit back out to the culture what we believe is the good work.
Right. I mean, what I basically believe is that in a certain sense, all along, we've been completely relying on the culture. We, as publishers, had been relying on the culture to tell us what was good. We just pretended it was our idea. So when I would get a submission, I would get all kinds of information along with it, who the agent was and what other writers that agent represented.
Right, the codes that tell you whether something is culturally acceptable, essentially.
Exactly. The culture was expressing itself in that pitch letter from the agents, the literary journals that author published with his or her favorite writers. There was all, yeah, exactly, these cultural codes that kind of helped me as an editor kind of look at that work and see the cultural context in which it was created, and at the same time, therefore, the cultural context in which it would be read. And my job was really a kind of to be almost an honest broker,
Right.
to listen attentively to the community, to hear what they were saying about what should be published. And then, as efficiently and honestly as possible, orchestrate it all so that it would be published as they wished it to be published.
Right. So now, but you're saying now you want to change the way you do that.
Yeah, I mean, I want to basically make that as I feel that I can do a much understanding that that's what I was really doing in the past, and not just sort of listening to some inner voice that told me the truth of what was quality. I now feel I can do a much better job. And the internet, by making the kind of cost of communication much lower, and and offering all kinds of tools to help. Tagging, I think, is such a wonderful tool. When you think about how idiosyncratic writing is, the world of publishing had been limited to very, very clunky tagging. And we could only have one tag at a time.
Right, because of the nature of the data, it was all a database-driven
Exactly. It was in the
experience.
nature of a bricks and mortar store. Bricks and mortar stores could only handle one tag: fiction, memoir, science fiction, romance. But books are tremendously odd and idiosyncratic, and they really need hundreds of tags to let people start to find their way towards something that they might like. I mean, the cost of reading a book is so high. We think about the cost of producing a book all the time in publishing, and we think that's the most important costs out there, and that everything needs to be based on what our cost structure is. But the cost of reading a book in this day and age, in 2009, is enormously high. Nothing else requires that a reader give up 15 hours of the inside of their head.
No, I think that's actually a very profound point that relates to the notion of understanding the exchange between the writer and the reader. That in fact the commitment required to read a book is immense. So if you look at it from that perspective, in other words, that start side of the transaction rather than on the other side of the transaction, which is sort of what I was talking about before, that it's, instead of looking at it from a publisher-centric view, you look at it from a customer-centric view, which
Absolutely,
is what you're doing.
absolutely.
Yeah. And that changes then the way you think about the transaction. It doesn't mean that you're still not thinking about curation and concepts of understanding between the two sides, but you're using the notion of the customer's point of view to drive your the way you build your business.
Absolutely.
So, and I know you've been, working on this ever since February of this year. What do you people are going to want to know? What is the business called?
Right.
And
Well, yeah. So the overall, my approach is to create a series, ideally. I mean, if it works, I want it to be able to be iterated. So a series of communities. The name of the business overall, this cursor, you know, like the blinking line on your screen.
C-U-R-S-O-R.
S-O-R, exactly. Which is, I think, a kind of a way of pointing at the idea of starting with a blank page, just as the writer has to do, and figure out, okay, well, what do we do now? So that's the name of the overall company. But that company will have, it won't be sort of branded as such. It's not going to be doing any publishing. It's just going to be the sort of the name of a business. The first community that we're creating is called Red Lemonade. And that's going to be basically a community of writers with whom I'm already very, very familiar. It's the sort of the quickest and easiest way, obviously, for me to start. But I certainly very much want to do a couple of different science fiction communities, definitely a poetry community, mystery community. Where I can find an editor and a publicist, to use the old publishing terminology, a writer-centric person and a reader-centric person, although I certainly hope that both of them have a little bit of the other in them too, where I can find those two people, the sort of the yin and the yang, the writer-facing person, the reader-facing person, who have a sense of a given community and the trust already of that community and relationships with writers and readers in that community. And I put those two people together and we build a community around them. And that community is on and offline. It is online in the sense that there is a website where a person can have varying levels of membership, very casual, quite registered, and then very, very deep. A very, very deep level, it will probably be a premium membership in some way, shape, or form. And you can upload your writing. You can create writers' groups around the writing. You can read the writing of those writers identified by the community through the editor, who are going to be published in the conventional fashion, in print, traditional supply chain print, I mean, and limited edition print and digital download. You can read all their work, annotate it, comment on it, engage with those writers. If at a point you feel your writing is, you know, you want that editor to look at all the comments you've gotten on your writing and the writing itself, obviously, and evaluate it to be published in the conventional fashion, then that's what you can do. And in some cases, it will be published that way by the editor. Everybody loves it. They think this is a great expression of that community's aesthetic and ideals. And in some cases, it won't be. You know, not every writer gets published in the way, you know, they want to be. We have to listen to the community overall. There are scarce resources out there. And you know, the editor's job is to sort of listen to the community and figure out, well, what's the best use of limited resources. There'll also be an educational component. You can take classes with the writers online. And then, obviously, there's all kinds of offline experience as well, not just the fact that we will be doing traditional print, but also events. You know, one of the things that I found in my sort of publishing experience is that all the great online activity that I get to do, you know, talking to you, David, going to the Frankfurt Book, emailing with publishers in Germany, emailing with reviewers in California, just drives the desire to actually meet in person and have opportunities to meet in person. And so that's very much a part of how a community would operate.
Oh, it sounds actually like you're kind of developing this. I mean, obviously you're developing it as you go, But it sounds like you've kind of laid out a pretty strong framework at this point. What is your sense of when you'll be able to go public with this?
I am hoping to have to do enough work on it in with developers over the next 3 to 4 months that I would be able to do a public beta by the end of the spring, by April, May. You know, that could turn into June the way so many things do. And that the first print books would come out of the first community, Red Lemonade, by this time next year, by late fall.
And are you going, I mean, in terms of the printing part or the printing component, are you planning on using traditional longer-run print run facilities, or are you going to do this all digitally so that you can do short?
A combination of both. At the moment, my instinct is that is to go traditional offset for the, you know, advance orders plus 150. So whatever advance orders are solicited by the sales reps will be having our traditional print go through Publishers Group West. So whatever orders are solicited, we'll do that plus 150. We might, if the wholesalers, Ingram, Baker & Taylor, Bookazine, place big orders, we may actually say, you know what, you guys really only need 15 days worth of inventory, because what we'll do after we do that traditional offset run is all the read orders will be done short run digital.
Right. You mentioned earlier you might have a sort of limited edition facility. Does that mean, you know, as far as, you know, printing on the continuum of you know, going to metal type and fine press? I mean, would you do something like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, ideally, every book will be, you know, very unique in terms of what its limited edition manifestation is going to be. But definitely some version, some in some cases, that's going to involve something very artisanal, book craft kind of thing. You know, it each book will ought to be able to tell us what is the object that I should be.
Right.
And I imagine in a number of those cases, it's going to involve, you know, real book art kind of construction.
So for people who are interested in following this as it unfolds, do you have a public website?
Yeah, we have a if you go to thinkcursor.com, thinkcursor, God, thinkcursor.com. It just went live a couple of weeks ago, and this is the first time I've had to spell it out. My apologies to your listeners. If you go to thinkcursor.com, you can sign up there.
Well, that's terrific. I will put that in the intro on the website, writerscast.com, so if people are listening
to
this,
thank
they'll
you.
Be able to find it. Listen,
great.
Thanks so much for talking, Richard. This is really interesting, and I think, you know, certainly I'll be following what you're doing. I think you're one of the smartest guys around. So
thanks, David, and I have to say thank you. One of the things I've discovered is that when I get given an opportunity to talk about this with someone like you, I am farther along in figuring out how the project should work at the end of the conversation than I was at the beginning. So I've made a little bit of progress during the course of this chat. Thanks very much.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, appreciate the call. Thanks a
okay.
lot.
Bye.
This is David Wilk for Publishing Talks.